perfect. Before we unpack this beautiful passage that many of us have probably read throughout our Christian journeys, let me share with you just an example from my life, how in a single event changed me. You see, many years ago when I was younger, I had one goal in life, and that was to become a pro beach volleyball player. That's all I wanted to do. Everything was orientated around that goal. People, time, everything was spent to get to that place. Nothing else mattered to me. But I wasn't that good at volleyball, I'll be honest with you. Maybe it was something more in my head. So to make money to pay those bills and my college tuition, I worked as a swim instructor at a local pool in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And that is where my life was changed. You see, one morning I showed up to the pool, and I was assigned to teach swim lessons for a girl named Jessica. Jessica was a 10-year-old girl who had muscular dystrophy. She was pushed into the swimming pool, and it was hard not to notice how her body was painfully contorted in that chair. Her arms were going like this. Her legs were going in a totally different direction. But she had this huge smile on her face. I mean, this thing beamed. The whole pool area was just like lit up because this kid was smiling so much, in spite of everything that we could see. So in response, I went over, picked her up, took her into the pool, and started to acclimate her to the water. And as I was acclimating Jessica to the water, I asked her, "Jessica, what would you like to do today in the pool?" She said, "I want to backfloat." I'm a studly swim instructor. I'm going to be a pro beach volleyball player. Backfloats are cake. The next 15 minutes were the most challenging moments in my swimming instructor career, I promise you. I just could not get her body to go in the right position to float. Finally, success. I got her body in the right place. She was floating all by herself. I am an all-star swim instructor. I was smiling from ear to ear. I was smiling as big as she was. Then I noticed she was crying. I started to worry. Did I do something to hurt her? And that's when I asked her, "Jessica, are you okay?" And she said, "Yes, I'm swimming, and the world looks so beautiful." That event changed this kid's life. Something so simple as a backfloat that I've done thousands and thousands of times for myself and with other people was something new for this little girl. It gave her a new vision for the world. I confess, I started crying too. Because it changed my life. I started to understand at that point that there's a bigger purpose and meaning for my life. Not focused on making volleyball my career, but making backfloats for kids like Jessica. Whatever that may be, I wanted my life to be that instrument for other people. So everything started to change for me. This was the first of a series of events that led me to this place today as a member of your family. Now, as big and as powerful as that event was for me and for Jessica, it pales in comparison to the event that has changed our lives. Paul refers to this event as the mercies of God. Okay, that sounds a little strange, doesn't it? That's more like one of those things you say to people in church, like that's going through a hard time, and you say, "Hey, I'm sorry you're going through that, but I'll pray that the mercies of God will be upon you." And that's not a bad thing. That's definitely not what Paul's talking about here. You see, the previous chapters in the book of Romans, Paul describes what the mercies of God actually are. And that's an event. One single event. It's not like an event that happened in New York in 2011, or just like the event that happened with Jessica and I. This is an event that happened in a single person. That person is Jesus Christ. His life, death, and resurrection has changed everything. And to better understand how this event has changed everything, let's situate that event in a larger story. The story that was referred to in our prayer this afternoon. How God has created humankind way before the time of Christ. He created us to have an intimate relationship with us. It says in Genesis that God walked alongside us. That's how close we were with God. And then sin came into the story. Our relationship with God was distorted, was derailed, was altered severely. Now, I know there's a lot of discussion about what exactly sins are, do's and don't lists, and those are helpful conversations to help make sure we live lives that are worthy of God's calling. But in our story, this story, the purpose of sin is that it derailed our relationship with God. That's what sin has done. But God is good. And the good news is that he is merciful. And what he did is he sent Jesus Christ to live on this earth, to die as a sacrifice, and to rise again to give us a future hope. And what Jesus did at that moment is he forgave all of us. Sin no longer is a barrier or a chasm or anything else that separates us from an intimate relationship with God. Paul refers to it, what Jared preached on a few months ago, as the peace with God. We have peace with God now because of the event of Jesus Christ. And what that means is we are no longer enemies of God. We are God's children, and we can cry out to him as our fathers. And we can look at each other here at Orb as brothers and sisters because of this merciful act. Now, to better understand the power of this event, let me illustrate it by a negative example. I mentioned to you before that I worked at a swimming pool, and it was one of those typical outdoor swimming pools that the heater was broken all the time. So every other week, you had to do a polar plunge to get in there and teach kids how to swim. Kids got in the pool, they turned blue immediately, and then the pool manager would get on the phone, call the repair guys. The repair guys came out, they would make a fix. For about a week, it would work, and then all of a sudden, Arctic Ocean all over again. We were freezing. Okay, that repair was never complete. It was muddied up by human hands. But this event of Jesus Christ, God sending Jesus to fix everything, is complete. We are cleansed and forgiven forever. Our relationship is completely altered. So God is not like those goofy repair guys. God is way bigger. Now, this event elicits a response. God did all this stuff to make things right between us and God. What can we possibly do to thank God because of that? Paul calls this living sacrifices. He says that we are to worship God by presenting our bodies as living sacrifices to God. That is a weird saying. When I read those verses years ago, I kind of like glossed over the living sacrifices part because that just sounded too weird to me. I don't want to lay down on an altar. But that's exactly what the early Christians would have read when they read Romans, is they would have picked this thing up and said, wow, all these great things about the event of Jesus Christ. Present our bodies as living sacrifices? And the reason why they would have done that was the Roman culture was encircled in a religious view of sacrifice. People brought animals to altars, like this one, and they would bring them there to try to get peace with God. In this particular one, we have a priest leading a large amount of people. Back in Rome in this time, this procession would have been hundreds, if not thousands, of people marching through the streets of Rome to this altar, leading these animals. And this priest would say certain prayers, and then he would kill the animals, unfortunately, because that's a pig and that means bacon. But he would kill the animals, everyone would sing praises, say certain prayers, and then they'd have a big banquet and go home until next time they wanted to do this. And they would wait for those divine blessings and peace with God until the next time they had to do this offering. Well, that's not what Paul's trying to say here. Paul is saying something so much different. And the way that we can find this out is when we look at the words bodies and living. When Paul talks about our bodies as sacrifices, he's saying that everything we have, our bodies physically, our emotions, how we respond to things, our souls, how we worship to God, our relationships with the people that we know, our relationships with ourselves, and our relationships with God. That's what body means. So that means everything we have. When he says living, that means it's constant. Perhaps another word for this could be daily. We are to daily offer ourselves, our bodies, as living sacrifices to God. So, does Paul mean that we all need to find an altar somewhere and lay down on it and then say, here we are, God? Not necessarily. But what Paul is trying to say is that your job, your marriage, my marriage, my studies, everything that we have is something that we offer as a sacrifice to God. It's all his now. So that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to do it daily. Now, many of us would think that's something we would do just individually, and it is. We do it individually in our lives, but we also do it corporately. As a community here at Outreach Red Bank, we give ourselves as living sacrifices to God. So that affects how we look at buildings and all the other things that we're doing, as Christian mentioned earlier, that we're presenting these things as sacrifices to God as a group. Now, that's going to be tough, isn't it? I mean, one, because we want to do things like play pro beach volleyball, I'm sure, and do sacrifices that are limited to like a large group of people killing some animals and then walking away and playing Xbox again. And then we have this pattern in the world that says success is so much different, right? You get ahead in your job so you can have more power over more people. You can make more money. And not that those things are necessarily bad. If we present those promotions at work, those extra pay grades to God as sacrifices, that's fantastic. But if we get caught up in the pattern of the world that says that those things are the end of itself, that's not what we should be conformed to. We shouldn't be shaped by those patterns in this world. And that's what Paul's saying here, is he's saying that we should be transformed instead from our minds being renewed. Now, that's a tough one too, because I like to respond to things on the outside. I'm good at responding to things like people cutting me off or my neighbor's dog that barks all the time. In fact, when I played volleyball, there's these things called hecklers. Have you ever heard of a heckler? Okay, you're from New Jersey and you have football teams, so you all know what hecklers really are. But those are people that would sit at the volleyball courts on the outside shouting things at us while we were playing. A lot of times, they were the friends of the folks that we were playing. So here I am, getting ready to receive a serve. Ready to do the bump, set, spike thingy, right? And all of a sudden, someone goes, "Hey, your shoes are untied." We're not wearing shoes, we're in the sand. Why would you be wearing shoes? So I look down. "Hey, lobster, it looks like you need some sunblock." My back burning. And then I'd start to get upset. I would let those people on the outside of the court penetrate my mind and derail my game. I would get so upset. And finally, my partner, thank God for him, he grabbed me. He says, "Ken, get it in your mind that you're here to play volleyball. You're not here to listen to those people. You don't respond to them. Don't be changed by them. Focus on what you're here to do. And that is to give me a good pass so I can set you and you can put the ball away." Okay. In my mind, I started to focus on that one thing. I was being renewed by how to play volleyball appropriately. So I didn't pay attention to those hecklers no more. I paid attention to my task in front of me. In a similar way, not necessarily the same, Paul is saying that we are to be renewed in our minds too. And fortunately, the event that I referred to here, that Paul talks a great deal about in the first 11 chapters of Romans, that event did something really, really good for us. It gave us God's presence. We have God's presence with us all the time. Not just when we show up here on Sundays, not just when we go to small groups, but when we wake up and eat that bowl of cereal, when we drink that Starbucks coffee, God's presence is with us. And that presence is the Holy Spirit. And the Spirit is renewing our minds in new ways each day so we can handle all the challenges that life throws us. So when those hecklers start shouting, so what? We're being renewed by the Holy Spirit. We're speaking directly to God. Now, this is where the vision starts to change, because we're being renewed from the outside, from the inside. It's affecting us on the outside. So we're starting to see people in a new way. And I referred to the people that like to cut you off on the parkway. I'm sure you've never experienced this, right? Well, I have, and sometimes I feel like cutting them off. But now I start to see those people as the very people that the event of Jesus Christ is impacting. See, those people too have been forgiven by God through the event of Jesus Christ. It's good news for them. God's mercy is there for them too. And those hecklers on the side of the court, I wasn't a Christian then, but I should have seen them as well in the same light, that they are the same people that God has redeemed. So when your neighbor's dog won't stop barking, whatever, not to say that you can't deal with that appropriately, but remember that these people are the same people that God's mercy is for. So that changes our vision. We see things in a new way. Now, seeing things isn't just enough. It should change what we do. We shouldn't cut people off. We shouldn't get upset and go tackle hecklers on the side of a volleyball court. Not to say that I ever did that, and there was no cameras to prove it. But we should never do that. But we should do something else. And Paul talks about something in this passage that seems to be the number one question of almost every Christian I've ever met, whether it's at seminary trying to figure out what the heck we're supposed to do when we graduate, or at any other church I've been to, is what is God's will for my life? What the heck am I supposed to do? That seems to be the question we're always asking. What are we supposed to do? And Paul says that we are to do God's will. Now, we could probably write some books and make lots of money on describing what the will of God is, and I'm sure lots of people already do that. But Paul gives us two things in our passage that describe exactly what the will of God is. The first thing is, we live as sacrifices. That's it. The event of Jesus Christ, we see it, we live as sacrifices. When we live as sacrifices, we worship God by giving God our entire bodies. Everything belongs to God now. The second thing we do is we are being transformed in our minds. We're getting a new perspective of the world. We're seeing that the event of Jesus Christ affects every single person in this world, even those people that we don't like so much. When we do those two things, Paul says that we are in God's will. We're standing in the middle of it. And that is a good thing. So, what does that look like? Well, if we continue to use the book of Romans to describe how that happens, we'll find out that Paul wanted to go to Spain. Now, thank you, Al and Michelle, for this picture. They went to Spain recently and sent me several pictures. And when we think of Spain, I think of exactly what Al and Michelle talked about. A gorgeous place on the coast, or even the countryside's gorgeous too, that has just amazing pictures of food. The weather seems to be pretty mild, so that's nice too. But that's not how Spain was in the first century AD. Not even close. Okay. That's pretty rough looking picture. Let me describe this for you real quick before your imaginations go wild. That guy dying on that bed there, he had a nickname called Pain to Rome. This is a gentleman that lived just before Paul's time. And if you know much about Spanish history, at this time, Spain wasn't necessarily the scenic place that we think of it as now. But it was a place that was trying to subjugate Spain. Rome was trying to subjugate Spain into the empire. But those Spaniards did not want that. A lot of people didn't want that. So they were willing to fight tooth and nail to not let Spain, to let Rome control them. And they did that. All their tribes rallied around and they fought hard. And gentlemen like this, Pain to Rome guy, he ended up dying in that cause. So this is just happening right about the time Paul comes on the scene. And he feels so called by the will of God to go to Spain. Now, at this time, too, there's another thing with Spain that's not so easy, is no one at that time really knew about the good news of Jesus Christ. So Paul was going to a place that people called barbaric, definitely not Christian, the food wasn't as good, and it was basically a war zone. So he wanted to go there and proclaim the good news. And what he wanted the Romans to do was invite them to be his ministry partners. So he asked them to support him as he's traveling to Spain financially, prayerfully, and maybe send some more people with him to go there. So that's part of it. That's part of Paul's response to the event of Jesus Christ, is to go to this scary place as a missionary. The second way that we can do this, and Paul urges the Romans to do this, is to live as though we have been changed by God's mercy. That's probably tougher. I'd rather go to Spain back then and duke it out with a bunch of people that don't know the gospel, maybe get killed, than try to live it out with other people that I don't always get along so well with. And let me put this into the context of the letter of Romans real quick. In the letter of Romans, there was two factions of Christians, Jewish and Gentile. And initially, the Jewish Christians were the ones that pretty much ran the show. They were the first ones in Rome. They were blowing up the faith by sharing the good news of Jesus Christ with other people. And then they were kindly asked to leave by an emperor because they were so wild and crazy. And as they left, all those Gentile Greek and Roman folks started to become Christians. And they kind of took over the church in Rome. So when all the Jewish Christians were allowed to come back to Rome, there they were. These folks were now the leaders of the church, the Gentiles, and the Jews were coming back to their old territory saying, hey, we were the ones that did this initial work. Why are you all running the show? Why don't you, we're the Jewish Christians. We know better. And the Gentile Christian says, no, we know better. We weren't kicked out of Rome. So they were going back and forth, fighting. So what Paul does in the last four chapters of the letter of Romans is he gives them directions on how to live together. He says that they should be united by the event of Jesus Christ, no longer fighting against each other. And they do that, they're expressing the love of God. That is why I say it's so tough to do. And it doesn't matter if it's an ethnic boundary or socioeconomic boundary. Sometimes it has to do with the way we vote. Sometimes it has to do with the way that where we work. Maybe it has to do with the sports teams that you root for. I don't know. But sometimes it's really tough to show other people that you love them in a real way. And when I say a real way, I'm suggesting that we are willing to lay down on an altar together as living sacrifices. And when you lay down as a living sacrifice, you're not fighting for what you think is yours and is better than the other group. You're laying down together as brothers and sisters. As I mentioned earlier, the peace that we have with God now is something that makes us all united as family. And that's what Paul is urging these Roman Christians to do, is to be a family, to express the love of God that way. And like I said, it's so tough. What this does is it shows other people around us. It did in Rome. People started to see, why are these Jews and Gentiles starting to get along? Why do they love each other? It's a witness of God's mercy. It's being a missionary by just how we treat each other. And it's the same thing that we can do today. There are so many things that seem to divide us. You pick up the newspaper, and the list could just go on and on and on, how we just can't get along. But as Christians, ultimately we should. And as we get together and as we love each other, that should show other people Christ's love for the world. So that's how it changes what we do. And as I mentioned earlier, this event is something that God has done. So the good news is we don't have to do it all on our own. We're not down here by ourselves trying to find the best way to love each other. We're doing it based on what God has done through Jesus Christ and the renewal of our minds through the Holy Spirit. Now, as a family member of the Orb community, I've had the privilege to hear the story and to see the story. And when I say that, I've had the privilege of hearing the story of how this community has been a living sacrifice. How a group of people who felt the call to share with young people the good news of Jesus Christ. I've heard that story. Now that Jillian and I live in the Red Bank community and see more of you on a regular basis, I hear how you all are trying your best each and every moment to do God's will, to show other people God's mercy in your lives. So I'm seeing it too. And I would like to thank you all for being a great witness of that. But here's the challenge. As we continue to grow as a body, and this goes for any Christian community, as it was true for Paul's time, it's also true for us, that we continue to offer ourselves, everything that we have, individually and corporately, to God as a living sacrifice. That's the challenge. Because it'll be easier to focus on other things when we start to grow or whatever changes our community. And it could be something totally different. So the challenge is to continue to find ourselves as a group laying on an altar, giving it all up to God. Now, the good news is the Spirit of God is with us, and this is with us. So as we struggle to figure out how to do the next thing, we can gather together, hopefully in small groups, and on Sundays as we gather together, and look to this resource and find out what exactly are we supposed to do. And we find out first that we are merely to respond to God's divine act of mercy, the mercy that changes our lives, and to present ourselves as sacrifices and to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. That's merely all we need to do. So help us help each other remind each other of that.